For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, welcome to a very special Sports Injury Central Pro Football Doc podcast. Special guest time, and yes, I know Pro Football Doc, but it's basketball time. It's March Madness time, and I love the off-season podcast because we can bring on guests. We've got lots of extra time. And look, March Madness is bigger than the Super Bowl when you really get down to it. So who better to bring in is college basketball insider, analyst, knows everything college basketball, Jeff Goodman. Welcome to the show.
No, thanks for having me, David. Listen, we followed each other for a long time. I wanted to do this last year, and I think all hell broke loose. I think we had something set up. And, you know, the only difference this year from like last year, it's a little different where coaches get fired earlier now because the transfer portal open today. So coaches, ADs have to do their firings earlier so they can do their hirings earlier so they don't miss out all these kids that go in the portal so they're not far behind. So everything kind of moved up a little bit. So this year, the portal's already got like 200 guys in it, and we're recording this thing at like 1:30 Eastern time. It's going to be a record-setting day with the amount of players going in the transfer portal. And it's just a dumb decision by the NCAA, Dave, to open the portal the day after Selection Sunday. We should be talking all about the tournament, and instead I'm tweeting out about these mid-major players that are going in the transfer portal. Stupid. Really bad.
So the NCAA actually made that decision to do that? They picked that, or they were forced to? Or
no, they picked it. They picked it, but they don't understand the consequences. And it's like, I get it. They want to open it up now because they want the window to be larger for these kids to be able to make a decision. But the other problem with it is, you know, these teams that are preparing for NCAA tournament games, the coaches should be preparing and spending all their time on that. Instead, they're literally doing like Zooms with players an hour before their tournament games. Guys in the portal, it makes no sense. It's not logical.
Okay, so that's like NFL free agency at the start of the playoffs.
Right,
right,
right.
I mean, it would make no sense, right?
None, zero.
And I can't believe that they chose this. This is like makes zero sense whatsoever. Zero. Attention off of your number one thing, which is, look.
Right, right.
I look at it this way. I don't think the NCAA would even exist anymore without March Madness.
Agreed.
Because that's their revenue stream is March Madness.
Yep.
That's really all that football's got. That's all they have. Right. Their licensing, the regulatory capacity is all gone. Yep. All they have is March Madness, and they're messing with the golden goose.
I've tweeted 25 times today so far, and I bet you 23 of them have been about kids going in the portal. Like, why would you want me doing that? You forced me to do it because it's the news coming out right now. Instead of tweeting about the NCAA, it's so short-sighted.
How many of, let's say there's 300 people in the portal. How many will be signed before the first Thursday March Madness game?
None of them. I mean, some of them are done behind the scenes, right? Some go in the portal and they have agents and it's already done. They're committed. But like publicly, very few. Most of them, they're putting their name in the portal to see – number one, if they can get a better situation, and oftentimes that better situation will include NIL now. Like, that's the first thing. Even for the low major kids who put up 15, 12, 17 points a game, the first question when they do a Zoom now with the coaches is, hey, coach, how much? What are you going to get me NIL-wise? That's what it is.
No question about it. But another thing that I'm just observing here, you would know, is this the death knell for the NIT?
Oh, yeah. The NIT sucks now. They changed it this year to whereas you know, in the past, it was if you win your regular season tournament, you're in. So the little guy knew, hey, even if, you know, even if I don't, if I win my regular season title, but I don't win the tournament, at least I get an NIT bid. That is no longer, because they realized, they thought they had this figured out where they would have more high major teams in, make more money off it, because they would have the gate, right? The gate at, you know, Indiana, Memphis, places like that. Well, what they didn't take into account was, because of the portal opening early, these coaches are saying to themselves, I don't want to play in the NIT. Number one, I might not have my team. They might all go in the portal. Number two, I want to get a head start on the portal. I don't want to be dealing with playing an NIT game and not being able to get, you know, get in the portal, talk to kids, have an advantage over those teams that are in the NCAA tournament that maybe don't have the same level of time.
And on top of that, even if you did do all that, a kid that is going to transfer, it's like you got to be worried about injuries. What does that do for your transfer possibility, right? Yes. This is an injury podcast. This is like, you know, NFL players sitting or you know, look.
Well, college football guys with bowl games, right? College football guys with the NIT, guaranteed, yes. Like, for instance, kid at Indiana, Khalil Ware, he's probably going to be a first-round pick. Well, if Indiana decides to play in the NIT, why would Khalil Ware play in the NIT? Like, he'll opt out like these kids do out of the bowl games.
Yeah, no question about it. And, you know, and teams do it too. Like, you know, you sit Russell Wilson at the end of the year because you don't want him to get injured because of the guarantees. You sat Jimmy Garoppolo or the Raiders because the injuries come into this too. So I see this as the death knell for the NIT, you know, in terms of what's happening. Because if the stars and players, you know who you can field, and teams don't even accept bids, and they're done, I think. That's too bad there. All right, so Selection Sunday just happened. Give us some of your big takeaways, whether injury-related or not, and we can get into some injury issues.
Yes.
I always say this. During the football season, we have so much to say, and there's so much injury information. But I tell my guys it's signal to noise. We have high signal, but there is a lot of noise out there.
Right.
Now, our injuries in basketball, not as much. The signal is high, but the noise is less. And really, we're in a position, and I hope we can maybe give you some insight in your followers. I think this is accurate. Would you agree, Jeff? We're the only site that gives true injury analysis.
That's why I reach out to you.
Yes. Everyone else is injury reporting. And so the coach said, and that's all you get. Right. The coaches often don't say much of anything either, especially in college. And so we try and do injury analysis, same with the NFL. So give us your biggest takeaways, and maybe I'll let you drive the bus and ask your questions about injuries, because you're better at doing that than me running a podcast.
No, I'm really interested to hear a couple things. So Kansas is the big one, Dave. They're the big one because they've got two of the best probably 15 players in the country. Okay, Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCullough. They're not a deep team. They really play four main guys. Those two, who are all Americans. Then they got a kid, Dewan Harris, who's their point guard. And then they got one more kid, Johnny Furphy, who's a freshman from Australia, who's come on, you know, pretty well the second half of the year. Well, Hunter Dickinson, well, let's start with McCullough, because I think that one, it will be a little easier for you to evaluate. He's had a bone bruise in his knee for a while now. I mean, I think he's been dealing with it. He said since the last time he played Cincinnati, which was three, 4 weeks ago. He's played, he's sat, he's played again. He sat in the Big 12 tournament this past week. What's your take on a? Obviously, it's a significant bone bruise because this is a tough kid. This is not your typical kid who's just going to bail out. Like, he's on the highest level of tough kids in college basketball. How much do you think this affects Kevin McCullough? He's going to play. He told me he's going to play.
Well, look, it's March Madness. They're going to play, right?
Yes.
And it does seem like the team and the player have been resting him to play in the tournament. That's so right. He's going to play. But the first thing I'd say to you, Jeff, is to the lay public and your followers, a bone bruise, suck it up, Buttercup. No. Look, this bone bruise that we're dealing with is a bruise of the ends of the bone being jammed together. It's not I got a Charlie horse. I got hit on the leg or the knee, or I ran into something and it hurts and no big deal. It's a bone bruise that's deep underneath the bone. And if you think about it this way, articular cartilage in your knee is what's most valuable. It's the articular cartilage ends got jammed together and the bone underneath was injured. And I'm not, you know, I don't like using big medical words and I can do that. But here's my simple analogy. Yeah. If you think of grass on a football field or a golf course or soccer field as the articular cartilage, that's the grass. The dirt underneath is the bone. When you get a bone bruise, it's like an elephant stomped on the grass and the dirt underneath, the bone underneath is injured. You could make a case to say it's a microscopic fracture and there's edema underneath in the bone bruise. The big worry is if you continue to play football on that grass that got the elephant stomping on it, will the grass die out? Will the articular cartilage die out? So it's a microscopic fracture underneath the bone, and there is potential long-term worry. So I'm just saying this kid is being heroic and wanting to try and play through this. This is not a suck-it-up pain tolerance injury or issue, and this is why it's real, and especially the type of dynamic player that he is. And it's going to affect him. Our six score on him, and as you know, and for some of your things, nobody's really at 100, right? 100 is you got zero, but you know, 90s is pretty good. Like he's kind of low 80s right now, and a six score of 81. In other words, he's not as dynamic as he normally is. Now he's a two-way player, right? And he's a pretty good defender.
Very good.
He kind of has to pick which one he's going to concentrate on. You know, I would guess he'd pick the offensive side because he kind of carries the
most
team.
Kids do, David. Yeah, most kids do.
I know. So what happens to his defense and to his team? So at bet, I think he's going to play, but he's in the yellow category. He's not red for us. He's not green. He, besides a little bit of rust and what have you, I don't think he can be as dynamic. And it's real. It's real. And then, so that's kind of where we are with him. But yeah, I agree with you. He's going to play. He's been setting himself up to play for this. And to make it clear, I don't think he has any long-term risk at this point in time for his NBA career. But the question is how dynamic, and I don't see him being himself per se.
All right, so the next one I think will be clearer for you because Hunter Dickinson, Kansas's big guy who transferred from Michigan this year, one of the best bigs in the country, dislocated his right shoulder about 10 days ago. I got yelled at because I pulled him out of the training room after their game at the Big 12 tournament. And I've known him, so I just wanted to say hello and see how he was doing. What do you think? Now, he's going to have about, four more days here. So he'll go 2 weeks in between playing games. Dislocated shoulder. How healthy, how effective is Hunter? This is the one I'm dying to ask you because I want to know how effective can we expect Hunter Dickinson to be?
Oh, I want to answer that question and we'll have a good discussion. But I'm more curious about who yelled at you for how did you pull someone out of the training room? That's like off limits to reporters. Yeah. Obviously, you're big time. And who yelled at you? I'm curious about that.
The sports information director yelled at me. And I've got a good relationship with him. But I understood how it looked. I shouldn't have done it. But I've known Hunter for 5 years. And again, it wasn't like I wasn't digging for info. I really was. And I hadn't seen him. I just want to say kind of good luck. Hope you're healthy for the tournament. I probably overstepped my bounds.
that's pretty funny there. So here's the deal. My assumption is it's a first time dislocation on his right shoulder. He's right hand dominant, although I think he can do a little with both hands. This is a big deal. First time dislocations take longer to return because there's more damage. Second and third time, less damage. Look, we've done the analysis on him. Right now, we have a six score on him of 51, which means we've put him in the red, which means not sure that he's going to play. And even if he does play, his numbers and effectiveness might be in the 50% range. Wow. Okay. A, because the standard, look, I'll bet this kid tries to play, right? Because this is the Super Bowl for them. This is, you know,
Hey, Dave, also, he should play because he's getting about $1 million of NIL. So I think there's going to be a little pressure to play.
Does it? Okay. But does it really work that way? I mean, NIL.
Yes and no. I think with this kid, yes. I think he feels some loyalty to give it a go, even if he's at 50%. I do.
Yeah, and I think even without the NIL money, there's loyalty to your teammates and to your team to give it a go. So I do think he will try to give it a go if he at all can. Let me give you a comp here.
Okay.
Not the same player, not the same situation. Julius Randle in the NBA.
Yep.
Knicks. The Knicks said, oh, we expect him back, this, that, the other. And we said, not so fast here. Now, the NBA is different, guaranteed contracts. There isn't the same pressure, but it is a big deal. Look, in the NFL, it is relatively routine to return to play in 2 weeks from a dislocated shoulder. Now, even then, it depends on the type of player. If it's a quarterback, it's a different story, dominant arm, whatever. But you play with a harness or a brace.
Okay.
To keep the shoulder from coming out into certain positions where it might dislocate again. Very hard to do in basketball and be effective. This is why we were fading Julius Randle's return with the Knicks, and he still hasn't. Now, different motivation here. College kid, this is the big thing, the tournament. I think he's going to try, but how effective can you be? Look, the only way you assure that the shoulder doesn't come out again is you put the harness or the brace on pretty tightly. But then it affects his effectiveness in rebounding, blocking shots, shooting, defending, and the whole deal. Now, if you don't put the harness on tight, you risk redislocation again. And it's still fresh. So this is why we're relatively pessimistic. Look, I hope he proves us wrong. I've never met the kid. You obviously know the kid. You obviously like the kid.
Yeah.
I wish the best for the kid. I'd be thrilled that he would outperform, but I kind of want to be fair to the kid by setting the right expectations of what you can expect here, which is not a lot. Defensively, won't be the same guy. Rebounding won't be the same guy. Block shots won't be the same guy. Can he get off some shots still? I mean, he's a 7-footer. Maybe he can get off some shots still, right?
Yeah.
But this is why overall we have him at a six score of 51. This is not.
Dave, we're going to clip this. Hey, we got to clip this. Get it to me. Because when I tweet this out about Hunter Dickinson, this was insightful. This was insightful because I think a lot of people think you can throw him out there and he'll be back to 90% when he comes back. And it sounds like there's no way.
And look, one of the things that I want to make sure as you help me reach a new audience is we deal at Sports Injury Central, panel of doctors. Yes, I'm the main one. I do have some basketball experience and college as well as MBA. We deal in insider knowledge, not insider information.
Right.
I have not seen an MRI of Hunter Dickinson. I have not examined him. I don't know. We're not violating HIPAA.
And best guess based on the information that you have.
Obviously. Insider knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Providing some analysis. Yep. And this is where we're kind of at.
It's a whole lot better than my information and my analysis. So I'll take it. I'll take it.
And this is similar. Since you and I chatted a little bit, and thank you, on Friday, you texted me about Braden Smith, and I was in surgery. I wasn't watching the game, and I'm the first to admit that I have not watched as much college basketball this season. Sure. I got 11-11-6 at home, okay? I mean, I spent all my sports free watching time. Chips on the NFL.
Yeah, you take Sundays. No, NFL. Your Sundays, your wife knows, right?
Your wife knows. Wait. Right? I get so much grief from my wife. Not Sundays, okay. Sundays and Sunday evening. Monday night, Thursday. And all those Saturday games.
Come on. Well, you know what it is? Hey, you know what it is in college basketball? You know what it is in college basketball?
All the time, every day.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Occasionally, you get a Friday night where there aren't games. Saturday loaded all day. Sunday.
And it's day crazy. And night, right? I mean, right. It's crazy. Yes. So yes. I can't follow it all, and I don't pretend to be an expert in it. Yeah. So we'll rely on you on that. We're just providing the injury side of it. But you text me about Braden Smith.
Yeah.
I'll be the first and embarrassed to say I didn't know who he was. Okay. Yep. So I'm just, you know, fair. Giving a spade a spade. Sure. But do the investigation. We have a great staff. You sent some video. We collected more video. Who's Braden Smith, Purdue, the situation, the whole thing. And look, by the time I got to it, he had already returned to the game, right? And the in-game stuff about, oh my God, he tore his ACL maybe, didn't come true, right? He came back into the game. By the time I looked at it, the coach had already indicated, and people already indicated, it was his left calf. But we were all concerned about the right knee, right? And that's why I text you back, I'm not sure he's out of the woods on this. Now, it did turn out, obviously he returned to the game, and there's no question he played against Wisconsin, right? But when I was texting you back and we looked at it, I said, that did not look like an ACL tear, which is good, but that did look like a bone bruise that we just talked about on McCullers, okay? Right. And sometimes those swell. And it was a possibility that Braden Smith wouldn't be able to play. He played against Wisconsin, but we knew he couldn't really be that effective. Not only because the left calf was pre-existing, he came into the game with a sleeve. Now he's got a right knee bone bruise, maybe mild, and there's different degrees of bone bruise.
Yep.
Didn't see him being effective and dynamic. And what happened in the Purdue Wisconsin game? Obviously, overtime and loss, but let's look specifically at it. He scored 7 points in the first half, not his typical average, none in the second half, half of it. In the first half, the guy's a good player. He can manufacture some points, but then Wisconsin figures out how to defend him. He's not as dynamic. Rebounds, 3 rebounds. I mean, that's not as typical because he's not getting inside. He's not as dynamic. 10 assists. More than his average. Why? Because he's looking to dish. Because he can't drive and do everything else. And he also had more turnovers than typical. Because he's looking to dish. And he also had 5 fouls. Foul trouble, which he almost is never in.
Never.
Which means hard for him to move his feet because of his knee and calf. The opponent had 22 points on him, who normally averages 10, the Wisconsin guard. Yep. 4 fouls early in the game. And then the final key drive, a charge that created the turnover when he fouled out and Wisconsin won. That's what we mean by injury analysis, looking at it.
Not as effective.
As effective. And is McCullers going to be this exact same situation? We hope not. He's not as fresh off the bone bruise, which, you know, Braden Smith, we had his 6 score like at 60. Okay. And if you look at his production, what he did, that's about right. He did play. Now, we have McCullers at 81, so we're a little more optimistic. But you get kind of what we do with this.
All right, let me give you one more. The one more would be, and this is a big one, Tyler Kolick, Marquette, point guard, who's been out for about 3 weeks with an oblique injury. Mm-hmm. Awesome point guard. Awesome. I mean, just maybe the best overall point guard in the country. You know, runs the show, makes people better, picks his spots. Little guy, not a big dude. And he got hurt on it, twisting as he threw a pass about, I think we're going back now, almost about 2 weeks ago that he's been off. So he'll get about 3 full weeks. Again, tough as nails. Would have probably played in the Big East tournament if they let him. But I think Shaka Smart and Marquette were very smart. And they said, there's no way in hell we are letting you play because ultimately we need you for the NCAA tournament as healthy as we can get you.
Well, I'm glad you bring him up too, because you got to at least give me one that I'm optimistic on, as opposed to being negative Nancy with everybody and injury doom and gloom. We try and call it as it is here. Oblique injury, muscle injury, does heal on its own. 3 weeks is not a bad timeline to get into the 85-90% healthy range, okay? Yeah. And how often do you really do throw that baseball pass and re-injure it? Look, do I think Tyler Kolick's 100%? No. Is he going to play? Of course he is. There are positioning him to play. How effective? I'd say mid-high 80s. Good. And the only reason not 90s is because of rust, right? Because he's had some time off. It's not really related to the injury itself. It's more the associated rust. So relative optimism, except for the rust on Tyler Kolek. Do not expect aggravation to it. Relative optimism for the Marquette guard.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, good to hear. Those are the ones I had to run through with you. I got about 10 minutes. If you want to ask me any, are there any tournament questions you want to hit me with?
All right. Okay, I'm going to ask you a homer question.
All right, go ahead.
San Diego State, okay? Yep. Love Fisher, Dutcher. Yep. It's the only college basketball I've really seen this year. Obviously, okay. Jaden Ledee and the thing. Yep. And yes, I was a bandwagon guy. I brought my son to Houston last year to go to the game. San Diego State, what do you think about them and their matchup, UAB and how?
I think they got a good first round matchup. I mean, I do. UAB obviously had a very mediocre season this year and turned it on, you know, and really the tournament, the AAC tournament was opened up because Florida Atlantic lost. Memphis wasn't very good. You know, South Florida won the regular season. They were just okay. So you could kind of see anybody maybe coming out of that league. You thought it was FAU. I like, obviously, Ledee's been awesome this year. He's taken a jump that you see very few players take at that point in his career. You know, basically a role player, you know, for first part of his college career at the same place. And then all of a sudden, he makes a huge jump and is one of the probably the best 10, 15 players in the country. I just don't know if they have enough behind him, you know, in terms of scoring. The other thing is they don't have any rim protection this year. Last year they had Nathan Mensah, who was big, veteran, block shots, protect the rim, finish around the basket, catch lobs. They don't have that. I saw them play probably 3 weeks ago in person out in Logan, Utah against Utah State. And again, Ledee's everything is advertised. He's that good. I just don't think they have enough. Like Lamont Butler, who made the big shot last year, obviously, to send them into the championship game against FAU, he hasn't taken that jump that he needed to take offensively.
Gotcha. So not getting to the Final Four, a Sweet 16 would be a very successful huge season.
Oh, right? Yeah. Are you kidding? Absolutely. That would be
maybe favored be a hell round year. One. If they can prevail round two, it should be celebration all around and see what happens.
Yeah, I think so. And round two, listen, Auburn, you can beat Auburn. Auburn's not overwhelming. Now, they just won the SEC tournament, but it's not like they've got big – Bruce Pearl loves small guards, and these guards can't really break guys down off the bounce. So I actually think San Diego State's second-round matchup – is very advantageous. I don't. Maybe Yale could knock off. It wouldn't shock me. It would surprise me. But I think San Diego State can win two games again.
Well, look, I'll root for Yale. Okay. Before we started, we talked about you're from Boston. You don't have a Boston accent. The reason why I could do my park your car in Harvard Yard and went to a potty and had some pizza is I went to school in Boston. I went to Harvard. And when you go to an Ivy League school, you have to claim the entire league. Because, right?
I mean, wait, even Dartmouth right now?
I got to claim them all. We got to claim all they have. Okay. Right. So in the NFL, you have this, you know, oh, I went to Michigan, I went to Notre Dame, I went to Ohio State.
Yeah.
Like anyone who went to an Ivy League school, we claim. Marcellus Wiley, still a good friend, went to Columbia. I got to claim everyone who went to the Ivy. So I'm claiming Yale right now. Even Yale is.
Can I give you my Marcellus story? Can I give you my Marcellus Wiley story? Yeah, I'll cut it down quickly.
No,
I was a young reporter.
This is good stuff here.
Yeah.
Because I'll go on his podcast or his show again. I think tomorrow. I want to tell him a good story.
So you got to tell him this story. This is caught. Okay. I don't know if he'll remember me. I was a young reporter covering the Buffalo Bills for the Associated Press in Buffalo. It was the year of Doug Flutie, Rob Johnson. And in the last year of Andre Reed, Thurman Thomas, and Bruce Smith. Bruce Smith actually was awesome to me. Loved him. Now, I think he was trying to use me a little bit and show me that he was injured throughout the year. So I think he knew he could kind of work me as a young reporter a little bit. But I loved him. So Ted Washington had the locker next to Marcellus Wiley. Marcellus is the best dude in the world. I love him. Ted Washington was a pain in the ass. Anybody who would go up to him, any reporter would go up to him, and he would give him this song and dance. Like, oh, well, I don't want to talk. Well, it would just be this big thing. Now, I work for the AP. I didn't need a nose tackle, generally, right? I didn't need a quote from him. I needed quotes from, you know, maybe Bruce, Thurman, Andre Reed, Rob Johnson, Doug Flutie, all those guys. But, like, we're at, like, week 8 at this point. I hadn't gone up to him. I'd been there for training camp. And finally, I said to myself, all right, like, I'm 25. Like, I'm from Boston. I had interviewed everybody, even to that point. First interview I ever did was James Worthy when I was, like, 14 years old. So I wasn't intimidated by too many people. So I go up to Ted, and I said, hey, Ted, you know, you got a minute? And he gives me this huge, again, this thing. Oh, man, I don't want to deal with, you know, and he's ranting and raving about nothing. So I look over and Marcellus is standing right next to him. And I go, why does he have to be such an asshole? Right in front of Ted. Like, Ted's right there. And I walk out of the locker room a minute later. I'm like, hey, I don't want to deal with this dude, whatever. So I left. Well, the defensive linemen had to come through the media room to get to their film room every day. So I'm up there in the middle of the media room. And sure enough, here they come, walking up, come up off the elevator. They go past and I'm like, oh boy, this could get ugly. Sure enough, Ted comes right up in my face. The PR guy is there. All the other guys are there. He comes up in my face and this guy looks over at the PR guy, Scott Berchtold was his name. He goes, this guy called me an asshole yesterday. And I said, and I'm fearing for my life at that point. Ted Washington's, you know, 350 pounds. He could have honestly destroyed me in one punch or anything. And I said, well, you know, I didn't call you an asshole. I said you were acting like an asshole. And luckily, Bruce Smith came up and, like, I think diffused the situation a little bit. Probably saved my life at that point because, again, but I wonder if Marcellus would remember that at all. My guess is no, it was, I don't know, 25 years ago.
I would bet that he does.
Really?
And I would say the only thing, knowing Marcellus, the only thing that prevented him from answering you or saying, I'll talk to you, is that Ted was right there. And he's the young guy. He had to toe the party line.
That's right.
What I've always said about Marcellus, look, this is great, Chatty. I didn't even know about your Buffalo history. I guess I should do my homework. I mean, like Doug Flutie, love Doug Flutie. Saw him in Vegas, the Super Bowl. That was, and Andre Reed, like all these people, et cetera. Marcellus, et cetera. But the one thing that makes Marcellus Wiley so unique, besides this Compton to Columbia and oh my God, he's still doing all this charity stuff. Yeah. Forget the fact that his wife now is Real Housewives. I went to his wedding, Anna Marie. She's awesome. Okay.
Really?
But what makes him different is, look, I'm not trying to name drop here. I'm just giving you the comparison. Yep. Junior Seau was one of my best friends. He actually officiated my wedding, etc. Junior Seau was the greatest guy in the world.
Wow.
He never, ever turned down a little kid, anything, anyone, anywhere. Yep. The tagline for anyone who's met Junior is like, he was the nicest guy in the world. Like, he had that way within 10 seconds or 5 seconds of a quick encounter, making you feel very comfortable. Yep. And he was the greatest role model. But here's where Marcellus outshines Junior.
Go ahead.
Marcellus will engage little kids that aren't coming up to him. Like, I mean, yes. He's just a big little kid. I remember he's working at ESPN at the time, walking through ESPN Plaza, Staples Center. And he'd go up, "Hey, little fella, what are you doing?" And like, "Hey, I'm a great football player. Come up to me." He just enjoyed life. He would go, so my guess is he'll remember it. And if he ever saw you again right now, he'd say, "I'm sorry I didn't come say hello to you and whatever, but I couldn't because of the constraints of the room and whatever, reading the room with Ted Washington's neck is to do that." He is that engaging of a person. This is why I'm not surprised at his media success in terms of what's going on.
No, he was honestly elite to deal with. I didn't deal with him a ton, but enough. He was elite. Now, I say that to everybody now. When he made it on TV and did a great job, I'm like, this dude, again, I was young. I was young and I thought I knew things. And obviously you don't when you're that young. But, man, the way he was with me, helping me out, I'll never forget it. You just don't forget those things when you're young and you're in, and a lot of people treat you like shit and don't try to help you. And Marcellus did. He just, at that point, it was kind of entertaining, that story of Ted Washington.
Got it. All right, Jacob's producer's here and Taylor's in the room. One question for Jeff Goodman. What do you got? They're all over.
Go ahead.
One question. What is it?
Who do you think is going to win the tournament this year?
Oh, what a boring question. Okay, I'll follow up. Who's going to win and who's the biggest surprise that will surprise people and go far? Come on, who's going to win?
So, I mean, who's going to win? I think most people are going to say UConn right now. I just can't go there again to defend. I think honestly, they got a great shot, but I hate going with the popular opinion. So I'm gonna go with somebody else here. I'm gonna say Purdue does. Although you've got me worried about Braden Smith now. You've got me worried a little bit about him that he's still gonna have this
injuries linger.
All right, so forget it. I'm out. I'm gonna go. Boy, I haven't filled out my whole bracket because honestly, it's been a whirlwind. Like since the brackets came out last night, it was like I did like 5 hours of shows this morning between the transfer portal. Boy, this is a brutal call. I think it's going to be one of the favorites. How about this? I will go Carolina in an unbelievable story because 2 years ago, as we know, they came out of nowhere. They were horrible for 80% of the year. They go on a run and end up losing in the national title game. Last year, they start off preseason number one, and they were abysmal. This year, Caleb Love leaves and transfers from Carolina to Arizona. Can't get into Michigan, by the way. So he goes to Arizona. Arizona's the number two seed in the same region as them. So Carolina could have to play their former teammate, Caleb Love in Arizona, in the Elite Eight to get to the Final Four. But Armando Bacot, RJ Davis were on that team. Both teams, and they brought in a bunch of transfers that were losing players. Harrison Ingram, Cormac Ryan. They brought in a reclassified freshman point guard named Elliot Cadeau, who's terrific because he pushes the pace. He makes people better. They all kind of came together as kind of losing players or players that we all kind of wrote off. And I think they've figured out, okay, you know what? Our chemistry, we're playing for the same thing. We've matured. We've put up numbers on teams that haven't won last year, and we're going to come together for the right reasons. And they've been – RJ Davis has been a top five guard in the country, and you need somebody like that. You can give the ball to – there aren't many guys, Dave, that I would say, hey, you know what? I trust with a game on the line. Give him the ball. Make a play. He can score. He can also get the ball to his teammates. There are probably a handful of those guys. He's one of them. And that's what worries me with some, like, even, you know, Purdue now with Braden Smith and then Zach Edey being your best player. You still got to get the big boy the ball. I'd rather have somebody that I know you throw the ball in his hands and he can make a play with the ball in his hands.
Got it. So who's a surprise, like a lower seed that gets to the Elite Eight or Final Four? So who's a surprise?
So it's much harder to find that. The best second round game, and this, you know, FAU UConn's going to be fun because obviously FAU made that magical run last year. They had everybody back. They've been up and down. They beat Arizona in Vegas, but they've had some bad losses. That's the second round matchup that I want to see more than anything else. I will say this. I will probably, if you gave me one team that I think, and again, you got to kind of look at the brackets there and see who's vulnerable. I'll take BYU to make a run as a six seed. And here's why. Iowa State's the two seed there. They're good. They've had an unbelievable year. I don't think they're super talented. Illinois is the three seed. I don't think they have a point guard. BYU, if they catch fire shooting the ball, they can beat anybody, and they've shown that. Now, again, if they don't, they lose to anybody. They lose to Duquesne in round one if they shoot 5 for 30 from three. But the numbers are pretty good for them in terms of they shoot it more than they don't. They're not overly athletic. They don't look the part. But, man, when you trade threes for twos, the Boston Celtics do it pretty well. You can beat just about anybody on any given night. And I looked at who they have to play, and I'm like, okay, could they beat Illinois? Sure. Could they beat Iowa State? Sure. Now that takes them, you know, that could take them to an Elite Eight appearance if they kind of run through all these teams.
All right, there you go. All right, final thing, Jeff, tell everyone where you're going to be at, how to follow you, how to see your work and everything else.
So Field of 68, we started the network a few years ago when I left ESPN. It's our own deal, me and Rob Doster. We do pregame shows. We're the only ones who cover college basketball year-round. We're the only ones. We have a great group of people, Randolph Childress, former Wake Forest star, Tyler Hansbrough, former North Carolina star, Rob Doster, myself, John Fana, who's a rising star in the profession. And we do them literally every night. Every night we're on Sirius, we're on YouTube, we're on Stadium, and we'll have pregame shows. I'll be out in Vegas before the games start. After the games, make sure you follow me on Twitter, X, whatever the heck you want to call it now, at Goodman Hoops. Also do a show with Di Gottlieb on Stadium as well during the day. It's normally 1 o'clock Eastern time every day, but obviously with the tournament starting up, that time will change a little bit. So, but the easiest way, and the breaking news generally comes on Twitter, on X, at Goodman Hoops.
Well, that's great. And that was our plan B if couldn't get Jeff Goodman. We were going to get Doug Gottlieb on. So I'm glad we got
you. You don't want to do that. You would have said two words the entire segment. Doug would have. Doug likes to talk. I love Doug. And man, even when I do the show with him, it's a 30-minute show. I think I get about 3 minutes in.
Yeah, but that might make my job easier, right? I mean, I don't do this for a living. I'm a doctor, right?
You're good at it. I like, listen, I'm going to watch this more. I obviously follow you on social media, but I'm going to start to watch a lot more because maybe I can, I've had some bad years in fantasy football lately. So I need all the help I can get.
All good. All right, Jeff Goodman, go follow him with Goodman Hoops. Thanks again for the time, especially at such a busy time of the year, not only the brackets, but NIL. Really appreciate you. And we'll be right back with part two of the Sports Injury Central Pro Football Doc podcast. All right. Thanks again to Jeff Goodman, part two of the Pro Football Doc Sports Injury Central podcast. It was so fun chatting with him, and I didn't want to say too much, but one thing I forgot to say on the center for Kansas, didn't the coach, we talk about coach speak all the time. Didn't the coach have said he looks good non-contact?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. But your shoulder's not going to dislocate again non-contact. I guess it's a good sign that he's got range of motion back, but it's just what can he do with the brace on? Anyways. Yep.
No, I'm glad you mentioned Julius Randle in that comparison, because I had on here that reportedly he's doing well in controlled contact situations with the Knicks.
So all the wording is the same thing. Yeah.
Is basketball controlled contact?
Why he hasn't returned to play fully.
And how often have I said this? Basketball is not a non-contact sport. Basketball is a contact sport. Football is not a contact sport. Football is a collision sport.
Right.
I mean, that's the difference there. And, you know, it's interesting that Jeff thought that people, and I like to hear it, felt a little bit of obligation to NIL.
Yeah.
To play. I was like, I wouldn't have thought that.
I think it depends on the person. Yeah.
Yeah. It depends on the situation. I don't know that I would have thought that.
Right.
All right. What else we got here, Jacob?
Well, Taylor sent me a thing he wanted your expert opinion on, that vasectomy surgeries increase at the end of March. End of the year and end of March is the...
Wait.
Not end of the March.
I got to give March Taylor some grief here. Okay. Boring. You had your journalist. You have a question for Jeff Goodman. Who's your favorite? Who's going to win? I mean...
Jacob didn't even get to answer one.
I know.
One. And number two, it sounded like he answered it a long time. And the best thing about a journalistic question, make sure they talk more than...
Yeah, open-ended.
So it sounded like I did okay.
I'll defend him too. He didn't have headphones at all, so he didn't hear the whole Jeff Goodman segment.
I didn't hear my answer at all, so I was like, it's good. It's going good.
Well, Jacob took a pass. He ceded to you. Who's your favorite? Who's going to win the tournament? I was like, oh, jeez.
I threw all my questions in the pod prep.
My son in fifth grade would ask that question.
Yeah.
You couldn't ask a better one than that? That's why I was like, okay.
Why
don't you ask the vasectomy question?
There you go.
All right.
For us,
yeah, that's your expertise.
Or I don't know if you can pull it up. I have to find it. Last year, my son, if you remember, he filled out a bracket, and on the first day of March Madness, he was sick.
Oh, that's right.
And then the wife came home after dropping his sister off, and he's on the couch with snacks and everything, TV ready to go, with his bracket thing right in his hand.
I think he did a poll, like, what do I do? Send him back to school, ground him, or just let it ride? And I think everybody was like, let it ride.
Or congratulate him was part of it.
Pulled the ruse.
And no, he didn't have a vasectomy. But look, if you're going to time out a vasectomy, and the reason why, there's some truth to this. Look, do I think that it's like 500 vasectomies or 500%. No, but if you're going to have one and you see what's rolling up. Okay. Yeah. Here's the key. Masters, it's great. Okay.
Right.
But it's on Saturday and Sunday, and the tournament's on Saturday and Sunday, but people would argue that Thursday and Friday are among the best days. Yeah. Right. Especially with 16 games on and four channels. So that Thursday, missing a work day, you know, I just had surgery and you just scheduled it for Wednesday, right? Kind of deal. So I think there is some mild truth to that.
Just a two birds, one stone approach.
I have a study from, it's a little dated, 2018, but showed the most popular time to schedule procedure is the end of March. And there's 500,000 men do it per year and they schedule it.
Yeah. I mean, in March, yeah, that's March Madness. I get it, but March Madness goes into April. But the first days, now the correlation would be, okay, there's a 3,000% increase for vasectomies on Wednesday or Thursday morning of March Madness. That would be, in general, you don't pick elective surgeries in the summertime.
Right.
In general, if you have a choice. Because you want to go and do stuff, right? In general, you don't pick elective surgeries during the holidays, Thanksgiving, November, December, in general. Okay. So that already starts to narrow it down. Right. So my question is, 500,000 men in the United States do the procedure annually. So is March, so let's do the math. So 480,000, so 40,000 a month, roughly.
Right.
Is the March number 120,000 or is the March number 50,000 and 60,000? Okay. Right. I mean, I would expect the March number to naturally be 50 or 60,000 because no one wants to do it in July.
Yeah.
No one wants to do it in December unless you're someone who's like, I get time off from work and I can do it then, but it's holidays. You don't want to do that. So I'm just curious of the breakdown there.
Sounds like we need to put out a poll on your Twitter X. Did you have a vasectomy? What month did you get it in? Are you currently recovering watching March Madness?
Let's see. March, I would say the Wednesday or Thursday, right? That would be the magic number, right? That would be because early March.
You need a Thursday, Friday recovery time.
To miss Thursday, Friday is the recovery time. So let's see. My son hasn't done a bracket yet. I'm sure he will. We'll see if he remembers to do this again. I'll report back.
He's got to come up with something new, right? You can't go to the well same time every year. I don't know. We'll see. Go to NFL real quick. Just want to mention Leighton Vander Esch officially announced his retirement today. The lingering neck issues that have plagued him his whole career. So glad that he made it so long.
We talked about it coming out of Boise State, that the neck was going to be his demise. The question is when. Remember, he played his whole career with the collar. He survived a first surgery, and usually the second surgery is the end. And when he needed it, we said, this is probably the end. He's had a great career. Congrats to him. You know, I wasn't saying don't draft him, and I wasn't saying the Cowboys didn't know about his neck when they drafted him. I'm just saying it's a factor in the analysis. And in the end, you'd say he was a good draft pick because he played very well for a number of years. But in the end, the neck was always the ticking time bomb. The good news is you should live 100% normal life. It's just football and the collision sport that he's now ruled out of after his second surgery.
This is the second Cowboys linebacker. I know you might hate the Cowboys linebackers, but this is the second one that had to end prematurely. Jalen's still running around practice squads a little bit, but he's not officially done.
Yeah, I mean, we were stronger on Jalen, and but Leighton was just, this is always the neck issue, so congratulations to him.
Cowboys like taking risks in the draft, so pays off sometimes, but sometimes doesn't.
Yeah.
Potential tampering investigation into Kirk Cousins, Saquon Barkley. It's always amazing how many free agent deals are in place the first day that you're allowed to have free agent deals.
But the tampering's legal. You're able to tamper. Yeah. You just can't have direct contact with the player.
Right.
It's back to the my guy Jim Harbaugh or Bill Belichick. Stealing someone's signals are not illegal. Stealing the signals and banging on trash cans and electronic means, Houston Astros, is illegal. Second, guys on second steal catcher signs all the time. It's not illegal. Okay.
Yeah.
You might get beaned and whatever, but it's not illegal. It's if indeed Michigan scouted other games and traveled to them, if indeed Bill Belichick filmed the signals. It's not illegal if you just have a piece of paper and said the guy touched his head and it means this.
Decoding
and wrote it. Decoded. That's not illegal. It's electronic. So with this, I mean, I guess I'm not sure what my point was here that I got off on. It's not illegal to tamper.
They're looking into how
it's how it's, for example, Atlanta Falcons personnel couldn't have spoken to Kirk Cousins himself. It had to be the agent. So I think what comes up in question is, did the athletic trainer talk to him about his Achilles? Now, I put something out on Twitter, less in free agents, but all the time, not always, but not uncommonly, the GM would say, find out about so-and-so. Okay, I'm not dumb. Yeah. Okay, 1 year there was a wide receiver that was rumored to be on the trade market. I made some calls, okay? But I didn't call the player.
Right.
I called his doctor. There's athletic trainers. And so it is common to scout things out. But the technicality is, in theory, if the athletic trainer called Kirk Cousins, that's not appropriate. Could the athletic trainer or the doctor call Kirk Cousins' surgeon or therapist? The answer is yes. And would the therapist or surgeon tell him anything because of HIPAA? That's a different question. Right. Mm-hmm. Could, in theory, the therapist or doctor say that's treating Kirk, say, hey, I'm getting a phone call about you. Is it okay if I tell them about you? If they said yes, there's nothing inappropriate about that investigation. And so I've made those phone calls, and it wasn't in this exact non-tampering situation. And the draft, obviously you get them all at the combines, but it's normal to check things out because you want to be ready to pounce, right?
Yeah.
And, but it's just a matter of the technicalities of how.
Yeah. I just want to mention the busy week for content on the website, sixscore.com is where you can go. Fantasy baseball, NCAA March Madness tournament. We'll be following all X, Twitter, SIC score if you want all the latest info.
NBA stuff still going and hot and heavy. I know you got some NBA injuries too.
Yeah, Joel Embiid tracking that recovery progress. Of course,
I stuff on that. So yeah. He did have the surgery on February 6th, missed 21 games. They did say the same thing about Randall, non-contact. They don't know much.
So Randall, he's not back yet, right? What happened to, we're optimistic he's good to go. And we said, we're kind of pessimistic there. that he's good to go. Who's the PRP guy?
Donovan Mitchell.
We got caught a little flack and said, oh, he's getting PRP. He's going to be out for at least 2 weeks and this, that, the other.
Maybe a month
out. He came back early, but now he's back out.
Soreness, yep.
Yes. I mean, we don't know for sure. I'm just saying that that's the likelihood, and that's why we don't delete or change tweets or what have you. If we're wrong, we're wrong. Julius Randle still hasn't made it back. It's been over a month now. Joel Embiid, what was the surgery again, Dave?
The flap.
February 6th.
Yeah.
Didn't they say 4 weeks, maybe six?
Yeah.
We're at six right now.
And then they're optimistic for late March. It seems like he's not ramping up quickly for an immediate return. So
I'm worried about the season. That's why we're kind of weak.
I've said all along, he's more likely season than back in 1 month.
Right.
So we've already hit that, right? Because he's not back in 1 month. Now, I'm not saying he's not going to be back in season, but yeah, he's got a chance for playoffs, but will he? I think he's still 50-50 to return for playoffs, for the start of playoffs at this point in time. Ben Simmons, I mean.
Yeah, he's had a microscopic partial discectomy. I think you're more in tune to decode those three words than we are, but he already had a back surgery, I believe it was 2 years ago at this point. So
is it the same level or different level?
I don't know that 100%.
The fact that it's not a fusion is good, but you look at the spin. Microscopic, really small.
Partial.
Partial, not full. This, no fusion. Everything's
the,
all good.
Discectomy is the scary word.
All the words to make it.
Pinched nerve in his lower back.
Seem like it's nothing. Second surgery, multitude of injuries. I think, I don't know what his contractual situation is, but I think it's
time. He's 40 mil next year, and then they have an out.
Stuck in what you have.
I mean, I think they're just trying to get out. Yeah. I mean, how they're going to get out is a different story. I mean, that career has been very unlucky.
That's the last year. So
how many basketball players come back after two back surgeries? Not a lot come back after one.
There's one. There's a player still playing for the Nuggets, Michael Porter, out of college. You were worried about him. He had his second procedure a couple of years ago, missed a majority of the year. He is back playing well, over 15 points a game, but if he has a third one, could be in the cards.
Well, it's not that simple, right? Is it same level, different level? Mm-hmm. Does it go on to fusion? So we don't have all the information, but everyone knows Ben Simmons has had a star-crossed injury history.
Yeah. Beast of the Week. I don't know if we want to go. Braden Smith. I know you had a consultation with Stephen Che. his AC joint that he had wrestling around a bar stool. So
look, that Stephen Che injury, that was real, man. That was not a WWE wrestling mat that he got slammed down onto. It was a wrestling mat, but not
on
the bouncing
gym floor.
I mean, more than some of the other barstool injuries. That was a real injury there for my friend there. All good. Well, I guess Barstool Big Cat put it out there. It wasn't me.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, yeah,
I didn't want to chat
with him, but it's not my place to release. I mean, I can go off video and see what it is, but the fact that I chatted with him, that's not my place to release it, nor did I ask Steven if I could release it.
Right.
But I guess Barstool BitCat did. So it is what it is.
Of course, he has a doctor on staff, when he calls you on
the it's all good. Baseball, the other big injury is Gerrit Cole, right?
Yeah.
I mean, look, read the tea leaves. Elbow, worry, worry. Early fatigue, worry, worry. MRI, no immediate report. This is no tears, no injury on MRI. And then actually flying across the country. I mean, now we're on the lucky to return to full form. Take it if you're a Yankee fan, if he returns after the All-Star break. That's not a bad result. Now they're on 2 months and then check back. Okay, 2 months. And then a 6-week ramp up. Aren't we at the All-Star break?
Yeah.
I mean, not good for Gerrit Cole, Yankees. And obviously Aaron Judge still has some issues there. All right. We're still in that UFC injury was pretty grotesque.
Jeez. That one or the Florida kid that snapped his went tib fib. So I think the UFC was worse.
I'll say that here. I'll say it here rather than I didn't want to do it on Twitter fully. Those injuries are very gruesome. The USC guy, you can go look at it at Pro Football Doc or Sports Injury Central, SIC score. leg snaps, distal femur fracture, and the basketball kid, a Paul George-ish injury. Tib fib. Paul George was on a stanchion. This one just broke. Right. Inside out, injury of the skin, make sure there's no infection, the whole deal. But more often than not, these injuries have an underlying cause, underlying weakness in the bone for it to snap there. Think of it this way. And I'm not saying they've got cancer.
Is that all cases or just I know you said that about the UFC kid. Is that also for the Florida kid as well?
Yes. Okay. Did he have a stress fracture brewing there? Mm-hmm. Did he have some benign growth from a child, like a knot in the tree trunk there? Okay. Same with the UFC guy. I mean, it's not typical to break like that there. Yeah. Now, I'm not suggesting it's the Dave Dravecki, kind of thing where it was completely weakened, but chances are good that there was an underlying stress fracture in the Florida kid. Chances are good there's something going on in that UFC guy to make it. It's just not a typical place to break.
Yeah,
I'm not saying they've got cancer or this, that, the other, but that's the typical as you look at it there. Because there's other areas of weakness. Okay, the bicycle chain always breaks at the weakest link. Why is that link weaker in this situation? You know, mm-hmm. why did it break there? That's all.
Unless he had pain or anything, you're not doing an x-ray on his lower leg just to do
No, and he may not have had any pain, right? Yeah. And just not known about it kind of thing. You may not have known about the little bit of weakness there, and that's why it breaks right there. I mean, if a table leg breaks off or a chair leg breaks off when someone sits in it, it's not that the table leg was or the chair leg was 100%. It was weaker, and then someone sits in it, and then it breaks. It's not, you know, okay, maybe it's a bigger guy, more force, who knows, or you flop down. But usually there's an underlying weakness when that happens.
So he said when the McGregor, when he snapped, he said he already had a little slight fracture there already. So that's
yes, similar type deal. Yeah. Things usually make sense there. All right, Jeff Goodman was great. Who do you want for next week? What do we got coming up? We'll start firing up Texans.
Might be baseball. Baseball.
Baseball somebody. Yeah. All right. We'll get a baseball somebody, see if they want to come on here. Baseball somebody for next week, maybe. And, of course, there's a lot of football guys out there, too, and whatever sports. And we'll use this offseason for some fun. Thanks for watching and listening. Thanks again to Jeff Goodman there. And enjoy March Madness, your vasectomy if you're having one. And away we go. Follow us at Pro Football Doc Sports Injury Central and give us a 5-star thumbs up. That would be appreciated. We'll see you next week.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.